to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning again, everyone.
Good morning.
Great to see you all. I had this thought, because I didn't have to bring a book today. I looked at this and it was awfully flat, and I thought, maybe I forgot my talk. Which would have been fine, too. So, today I want to talk about equanimity. I've visited this topic before. Some of you know Jody Green. Some of you know Jody Green. Mm-hmm. Jody is currently being Shuso, which is head student at Tassajara Zen Mountain Center. And I was talking to her on the phone the other day, and she reminded me of a poem that she really likes and that she thought was applicable for her practice right now. So I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about what occurs to me with this poem and how it relates to equanimity. So this is by, it's not a poem, a quote, I'm not sure. It's by William Butler Yeats, Irish poet, from a book called The Celtic Twilight, Fairy and Folklore. Mm-hmm. He wrote it as a young man. He was 28 years old. So, we can make our minds so like still water that beings gather about that they might see. It may be their own images, and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps even a fiercer life because of our quiet. Okay? Want to hear it again?
Yeah.
We can make our minds so like still water that beings gather about that they might see, it may be, their own images, and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps even a fiercer life because of our quiet. So the question becomes, what is this stillness? What is this quiet that we can bring to our own lives and to our relationships with others that allows us to see more clearly and live more fiercely in a good way, right? So that we can see our own image, meaning who we truly are, not all the ideas that we have, and also others can see their own image. So what occurred to me was this reminded me of the quality of equanimity. It's one of the four Brahmaviharas, one of the four abodes of the Buddha. The other three are loving-kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy. So we hear a lot about loving-kindness, right? Being kind to others, having positive wishes. This is sometimes thought of as a mother for the child or a parent for a child. That's metta or maitri. Karuna, which is compassion, which is sometimes thought of as a mother with a or a parent with a sick child. Mudita, or sympathetic joy, which is the delight of a parent for their child's successes, right? Ah, you did it, right? And then upekkha, which is equanimity, which is sometimes thought of as a grandmother or a grandparent who's kind of seen it all, you know, and isn't so intimately wrapped up with all the ups and downs and the day-to-day, but has a broader vision and can say, oh, this is going to be okay, you know, or I'm there regardless. So it's this sense of a broad view and not the stillness of having to deny the ups and downs or squish it up and say it's going to be okay when it's in the midst of something really awful, but it's this broad vision, this sense of stillness that can hold all of the ups and downs. So all of these qualities are naturally present in our minds. They're not something that we have to import from the outside. They're not something we have to concoct or manufacture, calculating how to do it. But we do cultivate them through our practice. So we can do this through meditation practice. When I read this poem, I thought, of course, of zazen, right? But we can also just recall ourselves to these qualities throughout our day. And we can stabilize our minds and hearts in that way. So the Pali Canon describes somebody who's mature in this. It says, identifying themselves with all, they pervade the entire universe with all-embracing kindness, with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity, with heart grown wide, deep, boundless, and free from wrath and anger. The heart grown wide. So the heart grown wide and deep is this, the heart of equanimity. Equanimity is equal. Animus, in this sense, is mind or spirit or heart, sense of consciousness. And it's this even-mindedness, this abundant, exalted, immeasurable depth. It also means, upekkha means to look over. So it's like the grandparent, you know, can stand on a mountaintop, can stand with the experience and see with breath. And it's also like looking through water that's calmed, yeah. We can see things as they are. Another translation is Tatra Maj Hatata. You like that? Tatra Maj Hatata. Yeah. Tatra means there, Maja means middle, and Tata means to stand or to pose. So, there, in the middle, standing, like mountain pose in yoga, right? You know, just solid. I'm standing there. I'm there. I'm there. I'm there. I'm there. I'm there. I'm there. I could just keep going on and on and on and on, right? I could just keep saying that. It's like Pema would say, stay, stay. Like, and that's what we have to do sometimes with our minds, right? Like a puppy, like stay, stay, stay. So what is that capacity to stay? The capacity to stay is grounded in equanimity, and it cultivates equanimity. So there's flexibility and stability in this. It's not a rigid stay. It can be playful, can be alive. Stay, attention. So we have this ability to stay, and stillness is a quality of stillness that includes activity. Balanced. Wise. It has both, like the other Brahmaviharas, it has both a near and a far enemy. So the far enemy that can look like equanimity but actually is its opposite is, the near enemy is rigidity, right? Gutting it out. That's not equanimity. Or compressing everything down. The far enemy is like clueless, you know, like bouncing off the walls. So all of these qualities feed into one another. Metta and loving kindness is connection. Sympathetic joy is also connection. Sometimes metta is talked about as the first place that we start. But they relate to one another, and equanimity is understood to be the engine of the other three. So, loving kindness relates to equanimity by imbuing it with a sense of care that helps you remain calm, right? That sense of kindness, that sense of care, with that we can afford to see everything. Without that, we flee. And equanimity tempers the energy of loving kindness so that it doesn't become kind of cluelessly running around, let me help, you know, this romantic notions. It balances. Compassion keeps equanimity from becoming indifferent and cold. And equanimity keeps compassion from descending into sadness, depression, right? Heartbreak, that kind of overwhelming heartbreak. It also helps set boundaries. Sympathetic joy gives equanimity a good natured sense of connection, you know, and equanimity supports a balanced sense of joy and appreciation. So they weave together, they all weave together, and equanimity functions to balance, to help articulate boundaries, to support calmness, a sense of proportion, keep an eye on the aim of practice, even when there's ups and downs going on. Loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy are vulnerable without the leavening of equanimity, without the grounding of equanimity. They won't last long without equanimity. We burn out. So, rooted in insight, equanimity is the guiding and restraining principle. It supports the other three and allows them to flourish and mature. This is this stillness. So Bhikkhu Bodhi says, equanimity is therefore the sublime state that crowns the other three and lets them work in harmony with each other. It helps the other three stay on the middle path. So that's why it's talked about as the engine. It's like first gear, right? When you go up a mountain to go, or go down a mountain, so you don't, gotta have first gear. So with equanimity, we step back, we gain perspective, we set effective boundaries, and we have discernment. With that, we have self-acceptance, self-respect. We see ourselves clearly. We see others clearly. We see our faults, our difficulties, our needs, our gifts. We act calmly without prejudice. And, you know, things change, right? One day something's required, the next day something else is required. We support our growth in the Dharma in this way. We include ourselves in the practice. So let's look again at the Butler Yeats quote. We can make our minds so still, so like still water. If we think about equanimity as something that's already naturally occurring to us, it's not something that we have to make. What does he mean by, I'm not saying that Yeats is talking about equanimity here, but for the sake of our discussion today, how do we make our minds so still? Can we make our minds so like still water that beings gather that they might see? I'm not so sure. But what we can do is we can work, we can bring ourselves back to the practice again and again and again so that our minds become more still. So we're not, like sometimes I think, you know, if you had like a giant iron frying pan and you put it down on your mind, you know, you would squish all the waves, right? Yeah. But then they'd go someplace else. They'd leak out from under the iron frying pan, right? And it, you wouldn't actually be, everything would just be roiling there. So it might look like stability, but it's not actually. And then once you let go of the iron frying pan, it sinks, right? So how can we, the only way we can calm our mind is through generating a kind of welcome basis that allows everything to settle. And then something comes along that shakes us up, right? It's not like we can control the world. And we respond. We respond. There are waves. Waves arise. But what is the stillness that can include even the waves? If we identify with the ocean, the fact that there are waves are not a problem. It's not a problem. That's what oceans do. They create waves. Minds create thoughts. Hearts create emotions. All of that is going to happen. It's going to happen. That's why equanimity is not about putting a gigantic frying pan down on everything. It's not about making things so still. Things will become still sometimes. But the spirit of equanimity includes even the roaring waves. Because it's still the ocean. It's still the ocean. And the ocean has deep, deep, deep layers, the benthic layers, the bottom of the ocean, where it's still and dark and not affected by the waves. Dogen Zenji says we should walk with our heads in the waves and our feet on the bottom of the ocean. So always stillness is available to us. Do we identify with the roaring waves? If so, we are rocked. If we identify with the whole ocean and understand there is this deep capacity for stillness there, and there's all kinds of creatures down there, we don't even know what they are, right? They're still discovering creatures at the bottom of the sea. So we're always discovering what this stillness is. So the waves can come, but when we do have still water, when we experience the stillness, then beings gather about that they might see, it may be, their own images. And that includes aspects of ourself, that includes aspects of others, that something is drawn to the stillness, right? We want to see what is most true about us. We want to see what is most true of others. And we want others to see what is most true about them. And we want to see, right? We don't want to be distracted by the latest idea about who someone is. We want to see deeply, who is this person before me? Who am I? We can make our minds so still, so like still water, that beings gather about that they might see, it may be, their own images, and so live for a moment, notice, not permanently, a moment, with a clearer, perhaps even a fiercer life, a clearer life, a fiercer life, because of our quiet. When we cultivate this quiet, this stability, this clarity, when we cultivate this quiet, this depth, this stillness, we see clearly, others see clearly, we see who we are, we remember who we are, others can see and remember who they are, and a fierceness arises out of that, a fierceness for this life. So it's not, I really like that fierceness is in here, because it's not about, you know, it's about being alive and responding because of the quiet. Because of the quiet, clarity and fierceness are available to us in a skillful way. So let us do our best to cultivate this stillness, this equanimity, this clarity, in the context of all the other Brahmi Viharas, and be with that together. Okay?